What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Coming up on Stu Does America, Dr. Drew is under attack for his comments about COVID-19. We look into what is the best way to publicly flog him to make ourselves feel better. Then author and podcast host Michael Malice returns to the program to tell us why, no matter what he does, President Trump's actions will never appease a bloodthirsty media. And Glenn Beck's new book drops today. It's Arguing with Socialists. We'll take an inside look. The best way to get every episode of this show is to look around and click subscribe. The best way to make sure other people get their dose of smart analysis, stupid jokes, and occasionally the opposite, is to share, rate, and review. Who wouldn't be won over by reading a review that says, it's great, whatever. On YouTube, click the bell for notifications, and if you have the means, I highly recommend pulling the trigger on a Blaze TV membership. Coming out of this craziness, we're going to need conservative voices more than ever, so protect them at blazetv.com/stu, and make sure to use the promo code STU, because that's how they know you like this stupid show. Plus, you'll save $30, the biggest savings ever. It's a tough time, but remember, they've delayed the WNBA season. It's not all bad news.
Stu Does America.
You know, there's a lot of crap that goes around the internet, but one voice has emerged as the voice of sanity in these uncertain times. That, of course, is the voice of Steak-ums. They tweeted, friendly reminder, in times of uncertainty and misinformation, anecdotes are not data. Good data is carefully measured and collected information based on a range of subject-dependent factors, including, but not limited to, controlled variables, meta-analysis, and randomization. You can maintain independent, critical thinking towards institutions without dipping into fringe conspiracies that get jump-started by individual anecdotes being virally spread as data. It's not easy, but it's necessary to keep any semblance of responsible online information flow. We're a frozen meat brand, posting ads inevitably made to misdirect people and generate sales. So this is peak irony. But hey, we live in a society, so please make informed decisions to the best of your ability and don't let anecdotes dictate your worldview. Okay, steak and bless. Well, there you go. I mean, they laid it out for you. Why, would you ask, is a frozen board-like series of meat planks separated by paper, seemingly calling itself God, tweeting such things? Well, you have to know who to believe. And if you can't trust Steak-em, who can you trust? It's deep. And what Steak-ems do to your digestive tract is almost exclusively anecdotal. You should know that. But Steak-em has been a pretty prescient force a bunch of times, like in 2014 when they tweeted, having a great time providing some Steak-ems to the hardworking people in the film industry. Don't go up to Harvey Weinstein's hotel room. Or the legendary tweet from 2005, fix your hunger with Steak-ems, slice steaks before you break, and maybe fix the levees in New Orleans before they break too. Sure, I mean, you know, the sound of frozen meat resembling an index card hitting a hot frying pan is wonderful. But maybe we should have listened to the entire message of Steak-em this whole time. Not everyone looked as good as Steak-em in everyone's conversation to, everyone kind of had this conversation where we decided, let's all look around. Yeah, let's do it. Let's convert to online epidemiologist. Let's just all do it together. Dr. Drew is getting hammered online after a montage of dismissive comments from over the past few months was compiled. Watch.
It's way less virulent than the flu, so it's a reminder that you're more likely to die of influenza, so go ahead and get your flu shots.
Mild, doesn't hurt anybody. That should be the headline. Way less serious than influenza. That's the headline.
You know what the 2% lethality thing is you have there? You're talking about the coronavirus? I think it's less than 2%. It's like 0.02%. It is less dangerous than influenza. Less dangerous than influenza. Your probability of dying of coronavirus, much higher being hit by an asteroid, I would say.
The flu virus in this country is vastly more consequential, and nobody is talking about that.
It's not ideal. It's suboptimal. And this allowed, of course, the internet to unload on Dr. Drew, calling him a scam artist and a snake oil salesman. The only thing worse than pissing off the internet is pissing off the internet when they're all really bored in quarantine. Now, Dr. Drew is not an expert on infectious disease. He is a real doctor who is best known for his medical expertise in the area of addiction. He's not a virologist. However, you know, on the scale of who you're going to trust in an ongoing epidemic, he's going to fall somewhere in between Dr. Fauci and Dr. Pepper. Of course, he's not as trustworthy as Steakums. We know that, as they proved in 1986 when they tweeted, Steakums supports our scientific community. Remember, if you work at an RBMK-type nuclear site and don't want your Steakums to cook themselves, read your instructions and keep an eye on the number 4 reactor. Wow, so prescient. Why didn't the Soviets just listen? Well, we can't all be Steakum. We're dealing with the biggest story any of us have ever gone through. And we're going to have the ability to be honest with ourselves. It's going to be really easy to go back in time and find clips of people acting dismissively of this pandemic. Lots of people acted this way. And using your Google to go back and compile lists of incorrect statements might feel great, but does it actually accomplish anything? The media has been making montages of Trump's early dismissive comments. And yeah, you know, he made some. He also acted early in some circumstances as well. The media has been targeting conservative media personalities with montages of their own. And yes, they can be made too. We can have highlighted people on the left, and we have. They're being dismissive as well, and that's the thing. It's rare to find someone who fully understood this thing anytime before February and almost even March. And we shouldn't act like we're all above those nasty elites either. YouGov released a poll in mid-March asking Americans how many people they thought would die from coronavirus in the next year. This is after the South by Southwest had been canceled. It was right when the NBA canceled their season. 87% of Americans thought it was going to be less than 10,000 dead. 55% thought it would be less than 1,000 dead. And 18% thought it would be less than 100 dead. They asked the same question 2 weeks later, and still 70% believed that the death toll would be less than 10,000 for the whole year. I'll remind you, it passed 10,000 11 days after the poll was released. We've been around long enough to see a million super-duper scary threats come and go. And most of them don't live up to the hype. Let's be honest about it. It's totally normal and natural to be skeptical. It's also normal and intelligent to weigh the effects of how damaging this cure is. All you can do is analyze the information you have to the best of your ability. That's the lesson I learned from the fine people at Steakum when they tweeted, Steakum wants you to know that we are there for the troops. And while we were being there for the troops in Hawaii, we couldn't help but notice certain security standards seem a bit lax in the Honolulu area. Wow, what a timely tweet that was. So stupid. You should always listen to a company that puts the sound it hopes to elicit in its brand name. This is a fundamental law. Just ask the people at Meow Mix. Here's what Dr. Drew said in reaction to the controversy.
My early comments about equating coronavirus with influenza were wrong. They were incorrect. I was part of a chorus that was saying that, and we were wrong. And I want to apologize for that. I wish I got it right, but I got it wrong.
I mean, sounds like an honest response. I don't think we need to force people into making public apologies for making a mistake that, remember, 87% of Americans were making in mid-March. But, you know, whatever. If you screw up, you own it, and you move on. Good for him. I don't see all that much value in digging up comments from months ago and shaming people if they didn't understand what almost will definitely wind up being the most deadly pandemic the globe has faced in the last 100 years. There are even comments from experts at the highest levels of expertise who did not see this coming. Not everyone has the foresight of Steakum, who tweeted, "It is with great sadness that we must announce we are pulling our onboard marketing campaign from the RMS Titanic. Recent studies have revealed that hull vulnerability issues, and we are just not comfortable endorsing the inaugural voyage." They were right on that one as well. This is a black swan event, certainly for the economy and increasingly for human life. I think the rules should probably be a little different considering the circumstances. Sure, you can decide not to listen to someone or judge a public figure based on their performance. Totally fine. But I'd argue the main use of retroactively stupid-sounding comments about coronavirus, if they're going to be exploited to their fullest extent, you have to have someone pulling a Nancy Pelosi. I know it's a high standard. In other words, when you try to attack someone for something you're totally guilty of yourself. Pelosi went on TV and said this.
What the president, his denial at the beginning was deadly.
Oh, it was deadly. This is only a few weeks after also going on TV and saying this.
We want to be careful about how we deal with it, but we do want to say to people, come to Chinatown. Here we are. We're, again, careful, safe, and come join us.
Everyone else in that video is dead. Not from coronavirus. They just were sad that they had to hang out with Nancy Pelosi. Come join me for a Chinatown super safe pandemic party, everybody. You get a virus, and you get a virus, and you get a virus. For Dr. Drew and the 87% of Americans who didn't predict every little twist and turn of the past few months perfectly, a little grace and understanding makes perfect sense. But to be perfectly clear, it doesn't make any sense for Nancy. She's just awful and lacks any ability for honesty and judgment. It reminds me of a tweet I once read, I believe it was from Steakum, who wrote, "Pro tip, when tempted by the fruit of a forbidden tree, reach for Steakums instead." Eve mega fail. I'm very excited to bring on our next guest, and he's very excited to be here because today is the big day, Arguing with Socialists, the newest book from Glenn Beck, available wherever you buy your books, even though you can't go to any of those places. You can go online and buy it. It's a great book to order. Glenn, congratulations. How are you feeling about the book finally
Thank
hitting
you.
The...
It's really good, Stu. I really like it, and it's an honor to be here. I just love it. Just love it.
Wow. As a... You seem really excited about it, and I'm very excited that you're excited about it.
Well, actually, Glenn's in the other room. He just told me to sit here with the book in front of my face, so you'd never know it wasn't him.
You know, I assumed it wasn't Glenn because you're on television in a T-shirt, so I assumed, you know, you didn't exactly dress up.
It's been a long day, okay? It's been a freaking long day, very long.
You know, I do the shows with you, so I've been working the same period of time.
You don't have
my life, Stu. You don't know. You don't know the half of it. My life is so much tougher than your life.
You are tortured. I know.
Tortured. Oh, gosh. It's
so the book is out as of today. You can buy it on Amazon, glennbeck.com. You get a signed copy as well. glennbeckbooksigning.com, I think, will lead you there. Let me start with this. I was going through the book, page 362. Big red font.
Hang on, let me get it open.
In the middle of the page.
362.
Can you count that high?
362.
Okay.
I can't.
Give me the big red quote in the middle of the page.
Infectious disease is the one thing that cannot compete with the death count of socialism. But give the socialists a little time. The race isn't over yet.
pretty interesting setup here as we get out of COVID-19, this era, hopefully at some point in our lives. Socialism is the one thing. It's probably number two behind infectious disease when it comes to global death count over the past 150 years.
No, it is. It is. It is. In fact, I talk about this is weird. I forgot that this was even in here. I didn't even remember. But it talks about the Spanish flu of 1918, infected 500 million people worldwide, killed more than 675,000 Americans. The only thing that has killed more people is infectious disease. In the last 120 years, the only thing that beats socialism is infectious disease. So...
I mean, I don't know if you put that on your campaign, posters or not, but it does seem like socialism is going to try to make a run here at some point soon, if it can at least get control. I'm fascinated by that because people don't think of it that way. Yeah, you know, yes, they'll say things were bad in a couple of these places. Sure, the whole Chinese thing and the Soviet thing didn't work out all that well.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
You go through
Czechoslovakia or Poland or any of the other places, Venezuela, Cuba.
And you include, because there's a whole, you have a whole section in here just going through all the failures of socialism. Cambodia,
one of my favorite
Angola.
It is interesting
to go through that whole list. There's a lot of them there. They all start, though, the same way. Lots and lots of hope with promise of this utopia right down the road, and it doesn't turn out that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. Socialism, I mean, that's why I have this poster behind me, lose weight fast, try socialism. It's the greatest diet plan of the 20th century. Most people just don't understand when it comes to socialism. They don't understand that it is the United Socialist, the United Soviet Socialist Republic. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was the USSR. That was communism, except it wasn't communism. Communism gets a bad name, but communism is the utopia part of it. What they've done is they've tried to do communism, but you never get past the shooting people in the head to get them to do exactly what you want, which is put your money and everything into a big pile and let's all just live happily together. That's communism, when we're all living happily together and there is no strong arm or anything else. Well, that's the problem. We never get past the socialist part. But our education in this country and in the world is so bad that we're like, we're not communist. Of course not. I'd rather you be a communist. It's never been achieved, but I'd rather have you be a communist and say, look, it's all going to be great and wonderful. Socialism is the one that has counted all the deaths. Not communism, socialism.
It's interesting because you go through this, we're going through this period here, obviously, where on the other side of this, these arguments are going to make a lot of difference. And that's why I brought up the quote about infectious disease. This is going to be the battle. You know, what is the trade-off between seeing an infectious disease that is mindless and just going to eat whatever it can, as opposed to a group of people with minds doing everything they can to crush human freedom? I mean, the battle is one that, you know, we're going to be fighting really hard, really soon, because they're going to say these temporary measures, well, you know what, maybe some of these should be permanent.
Yeah, they already are. And it's good. The problem is it's going to happen. By the way, I've never looked so thin. Have you noticed how much weight I've lost on the lower half of my body?
Well,
there?
People, at least when you look at that poster, they might know you're a capitalist. I'll tell you that.
Right, right. And look at, I mean, maybe it's the plaid that makes me look so thin. I've never looked so thin. Strangely, only to about here. Then I get fat.
Yeah, no, it is an interesting look. I will say that.
Yes, it is. Okay. So the problem is that we have all of these programs that are coming, and fear always drives us. I mean, because you can't use logic and say, oh, printing money is a good thing. Nobody will buy into that. You have to have some sort of overwhelming fear. That's why we talk about in the book, and it's on our chalkboard in the radio studio. Yeah. In fact, we should go over that tomorrow, Stu. Mm. The six things that I said were going to happen, and the last two is war, or catastrophe, war, and new change, a new enlightened era comes about. Mm. Well, we're there. We're just doing it that so far without the war. What's happening to us is COVID is covering the tracks of socialists, and they are changing the fundamental structure of our society. We're going to come back out of the other side of this if we're not careful, saying, what happened to our country? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, and the book is not all filled with, depressing things I've asked you to talk about here at the beginning. There's an interesting piece of hope in there that I found, at least, because I get a little bit, and you may know this from doing the show with me, I get a little bit defeatist at times, thinking that mm-hmm. there's this constant march towards bigger government, towards these things going away everywhere in the world. And
I don't know where you found hope, because that's a mistake. I did not mean, where is that? Because I did not mean to put that in here.
So they've printed a mistaken chapter here.
Because there's a mistake in here. Where?
Well, we
where
talk about socialism in the Scandinavian countries, right? And Bernie Sanders loves a socialism in Sweden and all these places. And you point out that at one point that argument actually was true. I mean, but they have looked at this and they have said, okay, we tried the socialism thing. Now we're going the opposite way, and this is when they're seeing all their improvement.
So here it is. It's on page 182. Our economy was in crisis. This is according to the Scandinavian or Sweden, some Yahoo, whatever, Norberg. He said, our economy was in crisis. Inflation reached 10%. And for a brief period, interest rates soared to 500%. At that point, the Swedish population said, enough. We just can't do this. So this is when they got out of socialism. Most people don't know this. When ABBA was around, they were socialist. Then they stopped because it was a massive failure. And they thought, well, we could kill all the people, or we could just stop doing it. And they were ones that decided to stop doing it. And they're not a socialist country anymore. And that is the one thing that I think can give us hope. The problem is, you know, with 20, what is it now? $27 trillion in debt. I mean, how do you stop that train?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be really difficult. And I will say the page before at 180 and 181, you have just some highlights from the Freedom Index, where all these countries are ahead of the United States when it comes to economic freedom now.
This is the craziest thing. On that page, it has a whole bunch of things that talk about, you know, taxes, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that the socialists here say that we need to do to be more like Sweden is the exact opposite direction of what Sweden is. Sweden has fewer regulations on their companies. They have made it easier to be a small business person. They have lower taxes in, what, three out of the five Swedish or Scandinavian countries. I mean, everything they do makes them a much more free and capitalist nation than we are.
Let me put you in a more comfortable position where you can be apocalyptic about our future.
Oh, yeah. Good. What page?
I'm going to go to page 234. And I think this relates directly to what is happening to us right now. We have a situation where we see South Korea and Hong Kong and Shanghai Singapore, used as examples of the right way to deal with COVID-19. These are the places that did it right. And what they did was massive privacy violations, which they, you know, used technology to monitor people incredibly closely. And it's a combination of what we're trying to do now, which is spend trillions of dollars and print money in a way that never has before been tried. Combining those two things together, is that our future?
Yeah, it is. Let me quote from this page. The party seeks power entirely for its own sake. We're not interested in the good of others. We're interested solely in power. Pure power. What pure power means, you will understand soon. We're different from the oligarchies of the past in that we know what we're doing. That's George Orwell from 1984. Mm. In this, we talk about how there is a technological growth here that we've already given too much power to. And if the government decides to grow, it will get out of control quickly, and we can become China quickly. To prove this, tomorrow on my television show at 9 p.m., we're doing a show called Arguing with Chinese Socialists. And we're showing the video of what, kind of what you did a little bit yesterday, showing the video of what they were doing and what we're doing. And they're all the things that when they were doing it, we were all like, whoa, wow, that's spooky. Glad we don't do that. And now we're doing it and no one's saying anything. That stuff is not going away. It's not.
Yeah. Modern monetary theory and technology together makes socialism more dangerous than ever. It's just one of the chapters in the book. And it's a great book. And it's very easy to pick up kind of wherever you want. You're going to have little bookmarks and it's post-its all over this thing by the time you get through it. And these arguments are more important than ever. Glenn Beck, Arguing with Socialists. It's available now
wherever you
buy or download books. Make sure you go check it out. Also, glennbeckbooksigning.com will get you to the signed copies if you'd like that. Glenn, thanks for coming on the show.
Yep. Thank you.
If you would like to give Glenn a little bit more of your money, I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't, get a deal with the Blaze TV subscription that's going on now. It's the biggest subscription savings we ever had. Go to blazetv.com/Stu and make sure to use the promo code Stu because that's how they know you like this stupid show. And I'm going to take $30 off your price because that's what I do. I go in and I actually lower each individual subscription bill myself. Not too shabby. Back in a second. You're not allowed to go outside, you know, not allowed to go to the grocery store, not allowed to go to the bank, not allowed to do anything anymore. Got nothing you can do. There's nothing important enough for you to walk out of the house and do anymore. I hope you're okay with that life. By the way, if you happen to be in Wisconsin, got to go out and vote. It's important. Look at this footage from Wisconsin. They actually had a primary today. The line, pretty freaking long is the way I would describe it. It goes on and 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 on. And you saw this, like, this is different than probably every other line we've ever seen just because it's a social distancing line. So it's basically 6 feet in between each person. And it's kind of hysterical that, like, you can make lines look really long when you get 6 feet. I mean, you could imagine how long you could make the lines look for when you're opening up. You got a concert going on. Your line can go all the way down the street. Even if you only have like 100 people, it's wonderful. It's kind of fascinating as we go through this, the idea that people are going to pick Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders in the middle of this in one state is just amazing. It's another example of bizarre incompetence on the part of the state government there. And speaking of Joe Biden, we have a celebrity endorser who wanted to make sure she came out and let you know that she was still endorsing Joe Biden despite the fact that he was accused of sexual assault. Let's hear the explanation from Alyssa Milano.
I have not publicly said anything about this. And if you remember, it kind of took me a long time to publicly say anything about Harvey as well. Okay. Because I believe that even though we should believe women, and that is an important thing, and what that statement really means is, like, you know, for so long, the go-to has been not to believe them. Really, we have to sort of societally change that mindset to believing women. But that does not mean at the expense of not, giving men their due process and investigating situations.
I like that.
And giving, it's got to be fair in both directions.
I like that. What an amazing new concept we have discovered here. Giving men due process when accused? That's an interesting time to roll that one out right in the middle of your presidential endorsement where you've endorsed Biden and now he's been accused. Now, you didn't hold that standard for Brett Kavanaugh. I noticed that. You didn't hold that standard for Roy Moore or any other Republican who's ever been accused of these things, whether they did it or not. The standard was always believe all women. And I love the excuse there. When she tries to explain why it's okay for her to now be on the side of due process. And her excuse is, well, I've always been on the side of due process. If you remember, I took a long time before I said anything about Harvey Weinstein. You mean the gigantic Democratic donor? The incredibly powerful man in the industry you work? You waited on him and you're using that as a point in your favor? Guess what? Due process has always been cool to me. It's always been cool to conservatives. What you're arguing for here, Alyssa, is the conservative position. There's no conservatives arguing that women should not be heard. There's no conservatives arguing that women should not be taken seriously. That is the standard. Women should be taken seriously. Yes, there have been times. Yes, there have been situations where women tried to bring their legitimate complaints and they were blown off by the system or God knows what else. Completely wrong in every way. That is not what conservatives are arguing now, and I have not heard a conservative ever argue that, honestly, but I'm sure it's happened in the distant past. The situation here is women, every time they bring up an accusation, should be taken seriously. And then, you know, the guy's rights should kick in, too, and he should have some due process. One person who seemed to understand that, you might have heard him on the clip saying, "I like that. I like that." That's Andy Cohen of Bravo fame. Andy Cohen was accused of sexual harassment in 2017. Now, he was in a feud with Kathy Griffin at the time, and I guess she released some letter from 30 years ago. God only knows if any of it was true. The point being, however, that Andy Cohen deserved due process. If there was a real, if there were a bunch of facts there, well, that should have been, you know, checked out. But that is not the standard. And we keep looking at this. There's two standards here. And maybe we need to do a monologue on this week. I still want to do a coronavirus-free show this week. Maybe Friday. The issue here is there's two standards being presented. The standard of Brett Kavanaugh, where every single person who accuses someone gets the benefit of the doubt, and the accused gets thrown in the trash and their life ruined. Or on the other side, you have the Joe Biden standard where the Democratic media completely ignores the accusation. I don't know if either standard is exactly right, but I will say the right standard is a lot closer to the Biden standard that Alyssa Milano is currently embracing. Hopefully she continues that. We'll see going forward here in the next few months. Back in a second. So the media continues to seemingly root against the success of things like hydroxychloroquine so they can prove that Trump said bad things at his press conferences. Not sure exactly why that's acceptable, but you know, here we are. Joining me to break it down is Michael Malice. He's the host of the podcast You're Welcome. And his latest book is The New Right, A Journey to the Fringe of American Politics. Michael, let me talk about a distinction we've discussed before, but I think it's important for the audience to understand it. You tweeted after seeing some of this crazy stuff on the press conferences that the corporate press is the enemy of the people, not the press, not the media, and not the mainstream media. You use corporate media. Why?
So there's two big reasons here. First of all, to regard them as mainstream is simply untrue. Their views are grossly at variance with the mainstream of America, and it gives them a sense of validity that they desperately want to have and pretend as if they do in fact have. The second big reason is there are many people on the left who are increasingly understanding what I refer to as well as the depravity and malfeasance of the corporate press, the endless calls for wars, the fact that they will take someone's child and destroy their lives just for the sake of maintaining their hold on power. So leftists have historically had a very strong skepticism of corporate America and corporations in general. And by invoking that phrase in that way, it invites them to kind of join the fight against the enemy of the people. Mm.
I printed out one of your tweets because I thought it was such an interesting question. And I'm almost depressed at the fact that I can't fight with you on this all that much. I would like to be able to tell you the point you're trying to make here is untrue, but I don't know that I can. Here's what you tweeted. You said, here's the poll. If you could wave a magic wand that would cure coronavirus, but would guarantee Trump would get reelected to two more terms through 2029, would you wave it? There are a lot of people in the media who would take that, I think, the magic wand and put it in their glove compartment and never take it out again.
Yeah, well, I was born in the Soviet Union, as you know, and my previous book was about North Korea, which we have discussed. And there's a good thing and a bad thing about American benevolence. And Americans are the kindest, hardest people in the world. They care, they're friendly, maybe not so much in urban areas, you know, like my native New York, but in certain other places. But there's a side effect with that. And that's a naivete. And I think a lot of Americans don't appreciate the nature of evil, and they don't appreciate how much those who dislike them do not value their lives. And if the choice is being given between, you know, saving the lives of Americans who they dislike and maintaining their hold on power, most members of this elite establishment would absolutely choose the second one. And we can see proof of this. How blithely Nicholas Sandman, how blithely CNN still saying, hey, you made a GIF. We reserve the right to sue you, you know, and ruin your life just for making a GIF with us and our logo and President Trump. So at no point, and their constant drumbeats for war as well, at no point is there any evidence, let alone proof, that they genuinely and sincerely care about, you know, people who disagree with them and are standing in their way in their control of culture.
You know, and this is some of that stuff is just really, you know, terrible coverage. Some of it is, you know, beating up on people that, that don't deserve it. When you watch Trump do these press conferences every day and he talks with hope about something like hydroxychloroquine or many of these other medications, they're doing like 70 different trials on different things. He does sure. come up with a hopeful attitude, but he's always qualifying it with, look, you know, the doctors are need to go through this. They need to do the testing. But hey, if it's a last resort, why not try it? And the coverage of that on a drug that there is some hope for some people, seemingly it almost prioritizes the idea that they'd rather have Trump be wrong than have this medication work. And it's really difficult to deny it when you're watching the coverage. And I want to deny it, frankly, Michael. I don't want to believe that people are out there rooting against saving lives, but it's hard to understand.
Stu, you cover politics every single day, and even you have a shorter term memory than you realize. Our previous president, Barack Obama, became prominent for a book called The Audacity of Hope, the Shepherd Fairey poster of Obama. Hope was the mantra. Yes, we can was his slogan. For 8 years, we were told how important hope and optimism is against our problems. Now that the president and any president who is showing resolve in an unprecedented situation that we're in, that he is showing hope, he's being criticized for this. This is how it was characterized yesterday on Twitter. It said, Trump touts, Trump begins stockpiling the medicine, I forgot the name, a comma, which has not yet been approved by the FDA. So would they prefer to wait until the FDA clears this and then you start the factories? Here's the other situation. God forbid the president had said in February, in March, this is going to be a nightmare. We are going to be doing things we've never even thought we'd have to do 4 months ago. Boris Johnson and major world leaders and the Queen Elizabeth are going to be in major trouble. Everyone would be attacking him fairly for instilling panic in the population, because we all know whenever things go bad, it's the panic that's often makes things magnified and exponentially worse. And the fact that he and all the leaders, governors from state to, you know, are saying they're like, we're on top of this. Here's the news. Here's the information. The fact that they're still criticizing for this just speaks to the insistence they have on maintaining their message at all costs, despite the reality of the situation. And that is the difference between a bias and an agenda. Governor Cuomo of New York, Gavin Newsom, governor of California, both hardcore lefties. Conte, who's the prime minister of Italy, who's there with the support of the Social Democrats, they've all spoken out positively about President Trump, which does not benefit them in any way because they're executives. They're in a position where they have to get things done, whereas the media, who's there to destroy and does not have the accountability, is perfectly happy to maintain their greatest hits.
Let me take a step back from the media for a second, because I look at this and it's, you know, look, we have it's a terrible situation we're looking at, and it's a lot of ugly stuff going on. And, you know, I understand what we're doing here. I mean, like, I you know, we want to save as many lives as we can. I think that's what Trump's motivation is. I mean, there's nobody in the world who wants to have an economy open more than Donald Trump. The last thing in the world he wants to do is close the economy for 6 weeks in the middle of an election year. That is not on the priority list of Donald Trump. And he's doing this, I think, because he wants to save lives. Let me ask you a two-part question here. One, how would you rate his performance so far in handling this, which is an impossible situation, I think, for a president to handle? And two, how worried are you that these things that are going on now, which might be necessary in the temporary sense, wind up becoming, many of them, permanent?
I'm going to say something that might be a little heretical on the show, and I apologize in advance. I don't think a President Obama or a President Hillary or President George W. Bush would be that different, because presidents aren't doctors. And look at Governor Cuomo from New York. You know, what happens is they get information. They're like, all right, how do we mitigate the damage? How do we get as many people cured as possible? These are not ideological positions. This has nothing to do with your role in the minimum wage, the estate tax, or abortion. It's like, how do we get this to stop with the minimum pain in the short term and the quickest comeback in the long term? So in terms of rating, I think everyone would get, in my opinion, an A, because they all have families and they all care about their families. In terms of what was the second part of the question? I'm sorry.
The second part is, like, we have a lot of these big major steps that we would never accept in any other situation. Staying at home.
Sure.
Are you worried? Obviously, I don't think they're going to make us stay at home forever. But there is a lot here, a lot of spending, a lot of new projects, a lot of all sorts of things, restrictions. I mean, there's a lot that's been built into the last month or so that is a power grab. And people who like power will try to hold on to it if they can.
Yeah, here's my other big concern. I saw a doctor, I think, from New York tweet this out, that his concern is that this virus is going to winter in the South America, Southern Hemisphere, and then come back in the fall. And if you look at how these things work, that is not at all an implausible situation. My biggest concern, and I agree with you, the power grabs, and I agree with you about this, you know, huge spending. But my concern is I do not see a transition between how we are now and back to a sort of normalcy, because at a certain point, the question we're going to have to be asking, and it's very disturbing to even verbalize this, is how much of a risk are we willing to take in order to reopen the economy? And that is a question everyone's going to have to answer who's, you know, in that position of power. And that, when you're talking about that risk, you are literally talking about saying, well, some people are going to have to die. So in the fact that, you know, these we can have some kind of food on our table. So it's a very, very dark question for people to have to answer, regardless of their political party.
Yeah, it really is. Let me ask you one more. I'll try to end it on a more ridiculous note, if we can. Eric Erickson, the conservative commentator, he's trying to honor the workers, the health workers in his area. Kids around his neighborhood are building crosses. They build a cross and they're, I guess, selling them to raise money for these people. He puts some lighting on it and then gets blasted by Newsweek magazine for having a burning cross on his front yard. You cannot make this stuff up.
Yeah, I was shaking my head, not at Eric, but at what you were saying. I saw that article. And first of all, what people need to understand is the Klan didn't burn crosses on their own lawn. They burned them as a terrorist threat to minorities to get them to be afraid.
That's a great
point. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is, it is really depraved that you would accuse someone of this most outrageous thing, of being some kind of, having some kind of Klan symbol, and have no accountability for it whatsoever. Whereas, you know, if there's any, there will run interference for how credulously are they repeating Chinese propaganda now? We saw just today, it was NBC News saying, well, we had a lot of deaths yesterday, but China reported none. Yeah, cool story. Like, it's so. my thoughts were with Eric. And thankfully, thanks to social media, and I thank God for it every day, they're being called out instantly on their crap and that tweet. And it's like, we're in a pandemic. We can't leave our house. And you're still concerned with finding imaginary racists and white supremacists. And their inability to change their tune is a huge Achilles heel and a huge advantage of those who are on the side of truth and freedom.
Well, we'll have to see if it forevermore he'll be Eric Erickson, who once burned a cross on his front yard. As you always point out,
right,
that will become a qualifying statement for Eric. Michael Malice, you're always welcome to come back on and be heretical at any time. We're always welcome. You're always welcome to come back on. You're welcome is the name of the podcast. The book is The New Right. Michael Malice, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks so much, Stu. Always a pleasure.
All right. Back in a second. Sometimes we don't have enough time to read. There's no excuse like that now. Arguing with Socialists is out now. Go order it, glenbeck.com or amazon.com.